I'm Stephen, he's Chris, and this is Mobile Arcade Club, a show where we take a look at games from Apple Arcade each episode and talk about what works, what doesn't, and hopefully let you know if it's something you might want to try. On this episode, I explore the serene expedition of LEGO Builder's Journey, and Chris guides a round creature through the lush environments of Leo's Fortune.
Hello and welcome to episode 37 of... I was about to say episode 37 of LEGO Builder's Journey. Let me start that again. All right. Hello and welcome to episode 37 of the Mobile Arcade Club, a podcast for Apple Arcade and cool mobile games. This episode, we are looking at LEGO Builder's Journey and Leo's Fortune Plus, an old classic revitalized for the Apple Arcade subscription service. But we're going to start off with LEGO Builder's Journey, which was the game that you, Stephen, have been playing the last couple of weeks. And based on screenshots and what I've read about this game releasing on other platforms with like RTX enabled and that sort of stuff as well, I'm very keen to hear what you have to say about this utterly gorgeous looking game.
Yeah, well, gosh, it's interesting you bring up, you know, how good it looks and screenshots, because it's very rare for me to grab screenshots of what I'm playing and just feel compelled to share them online. But this is one of those games that just, you know, it's not going to look as good as the PC version with a, you know, RTX 3080 video card and all the ray tracing enabled. But gosh, it still looks really, really nice, especially, you know, I played it across an M1 Mac and an iPhone, and it looked kind of incredible on both of them. But we should probably start at the beginning as to what this game is. It's a geometric puzzle game is how they describe it. It came out on PC and consoles recently, but it came out on Apple Arcade. I don't think it was a launch game, but quite a long while back. I think it was produced by Apple to begin with, and I assume maybe some exclusivities finished up. Who knows? It was on Apple Arcade first, is what I'm getting at. It tells the story of a father and a son on what appears to be a camping trip. It's one of those games that is quite light on. It doesn't really tell you a lot with its story. It's more a visual, it shows you things happening and you kind of just infer the communication that might be happening between the characters and the situations are very... It leaves a lot to interpretation, which is better or worse depending on how you like that kind of storytelling, but I found it, you know, quite nice. And yeah, so you control or you guide a child who, to begin with, is needing to reach their parent on one side of each particular level. This is a particularly clumsy parent who they'll go ahead, they'll walk across to the other side of the area, but in doing so, they might collapse a bridge or, you know, just ruin the way that you could get there. So you have to often play around with some Lego pieces that appear in the environment. Say they might just be sitting in a pile somewhere, they might be floating down a river. You've got to place those in the environment to create some sort of a path between where your character is and where they need to go. And you don't control the character directly. You essentially, there's a little, either one or more little yellow pieces that have just like one little, I don't know what they call them, but the little round sticky up bit on Lego that Lego things stick to. you place that in the environment, and if it's close enough to that character, they'll jump to it, and you sort of use that so that they can leapfrog between these two pieces and get from one side to the other, and you need to have... Yeah, a path that they can safely walk past or jump across, so there's not a, you know, a big chasm between where they are and where they need to be. They can only jump so high and things like that. So it's really just playing with the Lego pieces, with the environment, and finding a way to get this character to the other side in the most broad terms. I found it really, really enjoyable. It's got such a serene kind of mood to it. It's very partly because of, you know, there's no dialogue. It leaves you to interpret what's going on. It's very sort of peaceful, even though there are some perilous things that will happen across as you go through the story. It's never stressful, I guess. You'll always be able to tell, you know, that something's happened. You need to solve a problem, but you're never, you know, going to be in peril, under fire by aliens or guns or anything like that. It's just you get all the time you could ever really ask for to think about how to get across to the other side. It's the mood was just delightful and serene. It was a really, really enjoyable and really approachable sort of game to play on, you know, whether it's on a computer or probably even more so on like mobile. It was a really nice way to play it.
Yeah, just wait till those RTX 3080s get a lightning adapter and you just, you know, dock your phone on it like a charging cradle and all of a sudden RTX enabled.
This sounds good. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, a nice cheap addition to, you know, an already premium phone product. Yes. No worries.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but yeah, so from what I understand, what I've read and what I have heard you say about LEGO Builder's Journey already, it's a relatively concise game as well. It's not an overly long one, is that correct?
Yeah, it took me a little over an hour and a half beginning to end, and it's one of those games where how long it takes will be determined by how quickly you sort of pick up what the game is putting down puzzle-wise. So I got stuck on a few puzzles. There were one or two, especially towards the end, where it just didn't click to me that something could be interacted with or how something could be interacted with, and I ended up looking up some very helpful YouTube guides to those very specific puzzles. It's fairly concise. It's something that I completed on a Saturday afternoon, and I think it's really well suited to that kind of just, you know, I've got an afternoon to burn. I'm just going to sit here in a non-stressful environment. Nothing's going to shoot me. Nothing's going to try and beat me in a race. I just hang out in this really, really pretty area. And I think the graphics, as I said, they're not ray tracing level, but it's so, so pretty, especially some of the lighting effects in this game. There was a moment where you and the parent character start a campfire, and it just really took me back about how beautiful the entire environment looked with the sort of the Lego brick aesthetic of having the warmth of a fire and how the light and shadows play on the environment. It's really quite something.
Yeah, and that's certainly one thing that's immediately taken me with screenshots and the visuals that I've seen of Lego Builder's Journey. And I haven't even played the game yet, but all the screenshots just look so gorgeous. They look like these. It's very apt that it's on Apple Arcade because it looks like the very, very highly stylized renders of premium phones like iPhones or even, you know, what Samsung does. You know, they're beautiful renders in these, you know, highly glossy locations of their products and that sort of thing. And I realized perhaps this is meant to be like a similar sort of effect with Lego enticing you to buy nice Lego sets, which, hey, there's a lot of nice Lego sets out there. But yeah, these puzzles and these little dioramas, they just look so gorgeous. And I suppose if it is wanting you to go out and play or buy a Lego set, then gee whiz, it's highly compelling at doing that. So they've done well there, the old Light Brick Studio. But with how the puzzles work and that sort of thing, without actually seeing any moving footage of the game and just based on the still screenshots, sort of the way these little puzzle dioramas look immediately to the eye, I was sort of brought back to how some of the dioramas in Monument Valley look, and that was one that we covered a couple of episodes back with the Monument Valley Plus release on Apple Arcade. Is there really any similarity in how they play whatsoever, or is it just sort of a similar diorama functional aesthetic, but the puzzling is completely different?
There is a little bit. It's definitely not got any of the like perspective warping mind meltingness of Monument Valley, but it has, as you say, that same kind of diorama aesthetic, and as well as that, it has the same sense of like tactility that I found in Monument Valley, in that you can grab pieces of the environment and move them around, and it kind of feels natural in that you are physically touching this thing and interacting with it, manipulating it with your finger, or, you know, for a lot of the case, I was doing it with Actually, it brings up an interesting point. I was playing it on my MacBook to begin with using the touchpad, and I ended up moving across to the iPad instead just because I found it so much more enjoyable with that direct touch manipulation. There were initially a lot of the picking up pieces and putting them down. A mouse is fine, but I just found the tactility of there are certain points at the later on in the game where you're, you know, spinning dials or pulling switches and stuff, and it just felt like it was on another level when you're directly manipulating these things with your finger as some omnipotent god being that can touch the things in this world. I think earlier on you mentioned sort of it was a bit of a slip of the tongue, but you mentioned like playing Lego, and I think this game it's very. The concept of playing it is definitely quite apt. You play around with the world, with the pieces in it, just to see what happens a lot of the time. It's not that there might be multiple ways to solve a particular puzzle. It's really quite, it lets you solve your problems or make the solution in your own way with the pieces that you have on offer. It's not one of those games where you have one solution and that's it. And I found, that sense of play, especially, I, like probably many people, played with Lego when I was growing up, and just finding some of these very specifically shaped pieces, a strange nostalgia sort of came over me. There'll be these just little bits that I haven't seen in years there, and just seeing them and thinking, oh, so that'll, I can connect that here and see how this all works out. There is some advantage to having familiarity with how these pieces go together, but obviously Lego being Lego, it's fairly intuitive in that you can kind of see where things connect, so it's not like you're gonna be lost if you aren't lucky enough to have grown up with Lego or something similar before playing this. But it was just really, really enjoyable to play with the areas and have that be how you arrive at a solution to each puzzle. It was really quite satisfying in that way.
And as part of the tactility of the Lego pieces and the bricks that you're playing with here, does it capture the sound design as well of brick on brick and slotting into one another, or the sounds of Lego pieces being rustled together? Does it have those sort of sounds as well?
My memory's a little bit foggy, but I believe it does. I think the one thing that I wished it did have to sort of enhance that tactility along with the sound is, I think we talked about it would have been nice in Monument Valley as well, and it applies here, that some element of haptic feedback might have been really nice to really hit home that clicking together of a piece. There's something just inherently enjoyable about that clicking together of Lego pieces, in the real world, and you're never going to 100% replicate that in a digital sort of place, but it might have been a little bit nicer had they done it that way. It's a very nitpicky thing, but I did enjoy it. Yeah, it has that picking things up and they interact with each other in an oral sort of audio way. It does have that. It could have been a bit better in that way, but it definitely had enough to make me feel like I'm playing with Lego again, which is probably what they're intending to do, I reckon.
Yeah, the reason I bring up the sound is I recall earlier in the year, Lego officially released an album, for lack of a better word, of Lego ASMR, where there's a bunch of different Lego sounds or different tracks where they've recorded like thousands of bricks of Lego, different things, whether it be someone sorting through a Lego build while flipping through the book, or whether it's just half an hour of cascading Lego bricks and that sort of thing. And I'm not like a massive Lego enthusiast by any stretch. Like, I haven't engaged with any Lego builds for years, but listening to these Lego sounds and the sounds of these bricks interacting with each other, wow, it's very relaxing. It's very nice. So, if there was something like Lego Builder's Journey, sort of capturing the visual element of Lego while also having that Lego ASMR stuff, which is on a bunch of music streaming platforms, I'd be all over that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and I definitely would say that it's it probably doesn't have quite the same ASMR-y factor that those albums might, but it definitely, yeah, it, as I said, it definitely evoked feelings of being younger and playing with Lego just for the joy of playing with it, and that's, yeah, it's quite special in that regard, I think.
Cool, cool. Any other sort of closing remarks you want to make about Lego Builder's Journey before we move on?
No, not in particular. I guess the final thing I'll say is that, yeah, as I mentioned before, it's not terribly long. It's a great way to spend an afternoon, and it might be, I don't know, I don't have a child, but I imagine it might be a nice thing to share with, you know, if you're a parent of a younger child, it might be a nice way to, know, to have that shared experience. I feel like it's a story of, you know, a parent and child, and if that could be shared with a parent and child experiencing that story, that'd probably be something special, and I hope that's something that you might be able to do if you're in that situation.
There you go out and borrow a child today and play Lego Builder's Journey.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good. Well, moving on to our second and final game for this episode, Leo's Fortune Plus. Now, this one is from, well, I'm going to say 1337, but we all know from, you know, being on the internet for a number of years, that is the internet spelling of Elite. So Elite and Senri LLC, Los Angeles, the developers of Leo's Fortune Plus. Now, this is one that completely passed me upon its original release, which you would have thought I had written in front of me, but I don't. I think this was an Apple Design Award winner back in 2014, roughly. So around sort of that mid-2010.
That rings a bell, yeah.
Yeah, around that, you know, mid-2010, this was a very highly regarded game on the iOS. I missed it the first time, so thought this would be a wonderful excuse to visit it, you know, some years later. And I was suitably impressed on multiple levels with this game. To paint the picture, Leo's Fortune Plus is a 2D platform adventure where you play as this roly-poly ball-shaped character named Leopold. I'm pretty sure it's Leopold, but known as Leo, whose fortune and connected reputation has been swindled, taken from him, much like the banana hoard in Donkey Kong Country, which is a series I'll look for an excuse to mention. So Leo's lost his fortune and he's become a bit of a laughing stock. So he's decided that I'm going to retake my fortune and regain my reputation. And to do so, he leaves his wife a letter saying he'll return by supper, which is quite the claim to say that, yeah, I'll, you know, reclaim what's been taken from me, you know, just later today.
No biggie.
And yeah, no biggie whatsoever. So the way that this plays out is that you play through individual discrete levels across an area. So it's not a Metroidvania where you're in this interconnected world. So there's individual levels, and much like the classic mobile gaming scoring system, as we've discussed on some previous episodes, there are 3 gold stars on offer for each level. One for collecting all the coins in a level, one for not dying, which is quite difficult on some of these levels, and another for beating the level in under a target time, so in a time attack sort of fashion. But the levels in these sort of 2D platforming structure involve moving the ball-shaped hero, Leo, by using the left-hand side of the phone touchscreen, which is what I used in landscape orientation. The left-hand side you can touch and drag to move left and right, and then the right-hand side is dedicated to sort of, I've described it and, you know, used the analogy of the famous Nintendo mascot Kirby, using the right-hand side of the screen, you can swipe up to inflate Leo in a Kirby-like manner to sort of float across gaps and chasms and that sort of thing. Or he can manipulate various puzzles, like he can squeeze himself into a little gap and then inflate himself to, say, activate a button that he probably wouldn't have been able to touch if he was just regular sized. And conversely, you can swipe down to compress and condense Leo into a smaller size or distribute his weight downwards to sort of, not really like a ground pound or a ground slam, but sort of there are sections where you can use various wooden planks to like as a diving board. So you can jump and bounce and swiping down, you know, put your momentum down to try and bounce higher with each sort of jump. Mm-hmm. So that's how you move young Leo, or old Leo. It's not really established how old he is.
Indeterminate, yes, age Leo.
Indeed, indeed. Levels involve using these various moves to go through these discrete levels to solve various environmental and physics-based puzzles. So a lot of it's based on building up momentum or by manipulating objects to move in a particular way and take advantage of that to be able to cross gaps or, you know, move a boulder down a hill to activate a switch, which then opens up a gate for you to go through, those sort of things, or correctly distributing weight across a bridge or like a seesaw to be able to use that as a bridge to get across. And then you can use Leo's Kirby-like inflatability to glide over dangerous spike pits, which is a wonderful staple of the platforming genre or in gaming in general, which is quite nice. But one of the things that really sort of came to mind early on with playing Leo's Fortune was that there's a lot of tiny wings to the sense of movement. You have more direct control here in Leo's Fortune than you do in Tiny Wings, which is more about tapping and holding and then releasing to build up momentum across slopes and various inclines and that sort of thing. But there's a lot of similar design philosophies in terms of how you generate momentum by moving, that you go up and down hills and sort of ravines to then, you know, build up momentum and be able to go across various gaps and that sort of stuff. So you can go down a hill, use it like a slide to then propel you forward over a dangerous gap, which you can then glide over to then, you know, go to safety to the other side. But it's also reminiscent of an upcoming Aussie game that hasn't released yet, but it's coming to various platforms called XO1, which uses a malleable ball of sorts to explore a 3D sort of intergalactic environment with momentum as the main concept. So the point being, Leo's Fortune uses momentum as a core sort of design principle of how you interact with the various platforming puzzles and gaps and that sort of thing, which also has also a few loop-de-loops to navigate as well, which is very Sonic the Hedgehog in its nature. So
I was definitely just thinking that whenever a game uses momentum, it just reminds me of the way that Sonic is not about speed, it's about momentum, and momentum can be one of the most enjoyable like ways to interact with an environment and with a character. And yeah, I think it sounds very enticing, especially the comparison to Tiny Wings. I found interesting because it, as you said, Tiny Wings was a very straightforward, you tap the button to sort of add weight and go down, you let go to go a little bit longer, like to float a little bit more easily. This sounds like it takes that concept and adds just a little bit more complexity on top of it in the, you know, control of direction. You can inflate and become, you know, to reduce your, change your weight to make your move downwards potentially. It sounds like it adds just that little bit of extra complexity to give you more to play with in a puzzle way rather than just a score attack way like Tiny Wings was. And yeah, I think that it sounds like it will make for a very satisfying method of playing a game. So you've got me interested.
Yeah, it's well worth it for platforming fans, which I'm a big platforming fan. I love games with tightly designed platforming levels or sections and that sort of thing. And from what I've played through the first level and then the first area, and then a bit more of Leo's Fortune Plus, I've, you know, been very impressed by its presentation and the way that it handles and the way that it feels. But gee, it's Oh, it's gorgeous. It's stunning the way that it uses lighting and shading, the way that it composes its levels to have, you know, great amounts of depth. So there's usually elements in the foreground and the background which really make sort of the mid ground that your action takes part on. Mm. It makes it really pop because it feels like you're playing through this, you know, densely populated area with great depth, which is something that a lot of really great platformers do well, which the first one that comes to mind is the Ori series. So Ori and the Will of the Wisps and Ori and the Blind Forest, those games, you know, have a great art direction with a great sense of depth. And that's something that Leo's Fortune does really, really well. And there's sort of, I don't know how to properly describe how the environments are created in terms of whether they're like CG elements or whether they're, I don't know, but there's a photorealistic quality to some of the environments in terms of the trees in some of the green sections look so lush, like you could, you know, reach out and brush the leaves and that sort of thing, which it's not sort of like the same photogrammetry or photorealistic level of, say, Fantasian was, in terms of how cleverly designed those dioramic levels were or the dioramic areas to explore were. But yeah, it's just a stunning game to look at, and the visuals have not aged a day since it released, you know, several years ago. And I feel like the controls are intuitive. Like, I only played on the iPhone, but I feel like the touch controls feel great. They're highly responsive. Perhaps, you know, I might have a little bit of an easier time using a controller in some sections. But again, as we've said with other games previously, and as Stephen, you were saying with LEGO Builder's Journey, you sort of lose an element of, you know, tactility to the control and the input. You sort of remove a layer of the interaction that you have with the game, which I think works really well here. And I did make note as well that there are some clever variations on platforming tropes throughout, including one level that came to mind that sort of not lampooned, but sort of paid homage to the classic minecart level of a lot of classic 2D platformers, and, you know, some 3D platformers have integrated as well. Then there was another level, there was a train level, which of course there's a train level in a platformer.
Of course.
where you dodged railway signs as this jaunty Western tune played in the background, which I quite enjoyed it. But I think really the only thing I didn't like, or the only thing I thought detracted from the experience, is that most games that I play, I tend not to have to fiddle with the brightness settings of my phone too much. But I would recommend, with Leo's Fortune, just cranking the brightness of your phone or tablet up a bit, or making sure you're in a low glare area, as I did find some of the darker segments as you're playing through some of these underground shafts, the visibility is a bit low. So there were times where I dropped into some spike pits or some chasms that I simply had no idea existed because they were quite dark and difficult to see. So just crank the brightness up or play it on a different display if you have that available to you. It might make make it a bit easier to see, or if you just want to live life on the edge, then keep the brightness low. Who am I to tell you?
I'm sure.
Your parent or guardian.
Exactly. We've got tips, but whether you take them, that's entirely up to you. I really like that you sort of mentioned the photorealistic-ish. It's, you know, not quite photorealistic, but a photorealistic almost kind of visual style. Because I remember I haven't played it much at all. It was years and years ago when I've touched it, but I remember it being quite a showpiece for the relatively new at the time Retina displays that were starting to become more common across Apple devices. This is really, looking at screenshots, one of those kinds of games that, you know, it'll look nice on whatever screen you put it on, but when you've got the density of pixels to show that level of detail that, you know, that a a Retina display does. We're not an Apple ad, but you know, it is a genuinely nice screen. And yeah, it really, really shines when you can see when you're this close to a screen and the pixels are small enough that you can see that level of detail. It makes a really good showpiece for that kind of display.
Yeah. Without a doubt, Leo's Fortune was a stunning game and still is a stunning game. So it makes for a very nice addition to the ever-growing Apple Arcade library, which I think we're just routinely astounded at how good so many of these games looks. So I'm sure if I'd played Leo's Fortune at the time of its original release, I would have raved about it. And here I am now raving about it, saying if you enjoy 2D platformers and want a good-looking game to enjoy, then by all means, check out the Leo's Fortune Plus sort of remaster, if you will.
Well, there you go. There's a Apple Design Award 2014 and a Chris, It Looks Pretty Good and Is a Fun Platformer Award 2021.
There you go. It's a high honor to bestow, and I take great pleasure in bestowing it, I suppose, for lack of another word. My vocabulary has failed me.
But we've been talking for a long time. It's understandable. But I guess, should that mean that we move on to talking about what we're going to be covering on the next episode?
Indeed. What have you got for us, Stephen?
Well, I've been put onto this game by a friend. It's Legends of Kingdom Rush by Ironhide Game Studio out of Uruguay. It's described as an epic turn-based combat game, so that could mean a lot of things, and I look forward to finding out exactly what that does mean.
Indeed, and I've had a bit of a hankering for some of the classics lately. I played Sudoku on the previous episode, so now I'm going to play some Solitaire in the form of Solitaire Stories, which I think is one of the more recent Apple Arcade releases. It's by Red Games Co., who are based in Salt Lake City, Utah, and it's billed as the classic Klondike Challenge, and I look forward to seeing if it can dethrone what I think is the best Solitaire game to exist, the 3DS cult classic Pocket Card Jockey. So we shall see how Solitaire Stories holds up. But in the meantime, thank you very much for tuning in. Please leave a review if you've enjoyed what we've been putting into your ears. And we look forward to seeing you, or rather hearing. You're doing the hearing, we're doing the talking. We look forward to your digital company on the next episode.
Digital company, I like that. Well said. And we'll catch you next time.
See ya.